Hello and welcome to the podcast for Lotus Eaters for the 21st of September 2021. I'm joined by Leo.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the Channel migrants who are demanding entry into Britain by force. Also, the cancelling of Norm Macdonald even after he's dead, which seems like a weird target, but whatever. Leftists never sleep. And also the Malaysian trans extradition and the eco-fascist barricades or blockades. I don't know what they're describing themselves as now, but the guys on the M25 who are insisting that everyone must die. Anyway, so let's get into some of the stuff on the website first. So first thing to mention is the article from Hugo, the world's biggest daylight robberies. There's an article from him, which he goes into some economic arguments. There's also, of course, the audio there for silver and gold tier members. So if you'd like to get access to that, please upgrade to silver or gold, or to get access to the premium content itself, of course, bronze. But there's that. And also the last thing to mention is the live event. So we have apparently 20 tickets left for the Friday. Is that correct, John? And the Saturday, I believe, is sold out. Or
yeah, that's right. It's sold out because I'm on it.
It's gone. All gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one else is coming to see Leo. Anyway, so apart from that, I think that's it for the announcements because we've got a lot to get through. So let's get right into it.
Cool.
So Channel migrants. There was Reuters who went down to the Channel migrants, decided to interview them about their thoughts, let's say, on why they're doing what they're doing, because they could apply in France and they're not. And the interviews are amazing. And I thought we'd go through some of it because I think it's fantastic. Like, they just openly say, yeah, we don't care. So here's the headline here. We have no choice. No choice whatsoever. Migrants undeterred by UK threat to send boats back to France. So this is the Home Office saying we're going to start turning them around, send them back to France because, you know, this is a joke. The French are just sending them over because they don't want to deal with them. Yep. And the migrants have absolutely no choice in the matter whatsoever. They just have to. They just have to get on the boat and come to England. Couldn't possibly apply from France, stay in France. Couldn't possibly go to the embassy in France.
So I take it they're applying for asylum?
When they get to Britain.
When they get to Britain.
Before then, not so interested.
But yeah, yeah. And I mean, the idea of asylum, being an asylum seeker is, you know, a country's got to offer a safe refuge to somebody who's, you know, either being victimized by the government in the country where they are for, you know, say they could be gay or whatever, and they could be...
A dissident.
It could be a political dissident, or there could be famine or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And obviously with the turmoil in Afghanistan, turmoil in Syria, lots of people are coming to Europe. But they could seek refuge in countries that are a bit closer.
Yes.
But of course, they want to come to...
the raging war in France is making them flee to the UK.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Sure.
But so, I mean, have they got reasons for wanting to come to the UK? I'm going to be honest. France has got better food, better weather. I'd stay in France.
Well, we have some reasons from the interviewees. So Mustafa Suleiman, a very French name, 21, is resolute in his determination to reach Britain and won't be deterred from London's threats to intercept boats illegally carrying migrants into the Channel and send them back to France. Suleiman, who fled Sudan's Darfur region in 2019, has tried to make the perilous journey through some of the world's busiest shipping lanes twice last year. Both times he was thwarted by French police before making it off the beach. Hmm. So before he made it off, both times he was sent back because, no. You can't just break into someone else's country because you feel like it.
Yeah, but I think, like, if somebody wants to come here that bad, I don't even really want to be here. I'd rather be somewhere else. I'd rather be in Greece right now. You know what I mean? Getting a suntan. Like, if he wants to be here that bad, I think he'll probably make a pretty good citizen. I think we should maybe, like, you know, just make some space, like, kick some people out. Just go, like, take a truck down to Wetherspoons, fill it up.
Why is he so uncomfortable in France?
Is there more racism in France? I don't know.
I don't think Suleiman's fleeing French racism.
Well, no, but I mean, I think a lot of people who... There's a sort of a blurry line between asylum seeking and economic migration.
Sure, and Suleiman here gives us the example. I mean, he came from Darfur, a region that's been at war for like 20-odd years or whatever it is now. Yeah. Could have stopped in Egypt, where there is no war. No, he then went presumably to Libya, where there is a war, again, for some reason, and then made his way through Europe, where there is no war, to get to France, and then to Calais for Britain. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So he gives some more quotes. We will try until the last day of our lives, Suleiman told reporters in a camp on a wasteland edge of Calais. Suleiman said that he would be ready to throw himself into the open seas if ever a British patrol ship stood between him and UK shores. So he's going to risk his own life.
Man, this guy's ready to be British. This guy's going to turn up with like Union Jack underpants on.
I really don't think so.
Think of the triathlon teams, the Olympic teams we're going to have, the boating and the swimming. Like, if these people, you know, get through, It's going to be incredible.
And I'm sure when he arrived in France, he was wearing, you know, French stuff, baguette, beret, you know. Anyway, so he continues, Britain is my only solution, he said in faltering English there, and also no choice. He's got no choice whatsoever. He can't possibly apply for asylum in France. Couldn't do that. That would be
Does he say why Britain is his only solution?
Just is.
Because Britain, for a lot of people, is the problem.
Like Darfur's at war, therefore Britain. that's as simple as it gets.
Does he not follow any woke leftists on Twitter? I mean, apparently Britain is the source of all the world's ills. I don't know, maybe like genuine sort of you know, people from other countries don't see Britain as such a horrific place.
No, but anyway, let's move on, because this reminded me, this interview, of actually a situation before in which there was another chap. So you can see the headline here from The Guardian. Teenager found dead, tried to cross channel in dinghy with shovels for oars. Jeez. And this is horrible, you know, teenager dies in the channel. He's desperately trying to make it to Britain because France... No, the story was fake news.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not joking. Forget the next one. I did like
The Guardian published a story that wasn't true.
Yeah, completely.
Well, I for one, I'm shocked that the highly partisan Guardian, with its ideology and explicit agenda, would publish a fake story.
So we get the next one. We have The Independent, of all people, who actually debunked this. So it turns out that the guy was with another guy, and he drowned, but his friend got out and then just lied to the press and said he was 16. Well, it turns out he was 28. And... yeah.
That's like me on Tinder.
Yeah, so it's a guy who was 28. He'd come from Sudan, go all the way to Calais, stole the dinghy, stole the oars, and then decided to like paddle his way across to England. And the reason for that is because he applied for asylum in France, and he's not an asylum seeker who's legitimate, so they rejected him.
Right.
So he was like, I'll just go to Britain then.
Yeah.
And I'll get it for free.
Has Britain got... Is it easier to claim asylum in Britain than it is in France?
Presumably so. Otherwise, I guess, why would they be doing it? You know?
Right, right.
I mean, they could also go to Germany and whatnot, and they don't feel much like that either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, complete chancer there. So it reminded me of that. But anyway, let's go back to the interviews, because there's some more of this. So 16-year-old Afghan Ali Husseini, I'm like 16-year-old, given the previous example of teenager, I'm not sure I actually trust the ages given in some of these.
Well, yeah. Funnily enough, like, sorry to interrupt, but my mate Moses fosters kids, and he took in a refugee kid from Syria, and Moses has got like a 14-year-old daughter and stuff, and so this kid's supposed to be like 14 or 15 or whatever. Like, turns up, you know, he's like a hulking guy with a beard. It's like obviously not 15 or whatever he was supposed to be, so he had to take him back to the, you know, the whatever it is, the pound, not the, what, I mean, what
the,
you call it,
the asylum
center.
Yeah,
he had to, yeah,
yeah. I mean,
he couldn't have, you know, some guy who's like 24 and, you know, with his daughter.
I'm sure you've seen the meme as well, the one who claimed he was, what was it, 16, he went to a sixth form in school uniform, he was 30. like, even the kids were like doing Snapchats of him being like, why is there a 30?
It reminds me of Happy Days and like all those things like Beverly Hills 90210, where you'd have like some 36-year-old actor pretending he's at high school.
Yes.
Like the Fonzie, you know, with grey hair coming up the sides, like, hey guys.
But that's actually what's going on in British schools. So 16-year-old, totally 16-year-old Afghani Ali arrived in the northern part of the town on a day earlier after a journey of several weeks from his home province in Uruguzgan. I don't know how you say that. So apparently it's in Afghanistan. Husseini said he fled on foot and by car across the Iranian frontier as the Taliban swept across his homeland. His parents had urged him to leave, but could not afford for him to take his two younger siblings. I don't know why we should trust his account of this. I don't think we should, because if the whole family's in danger, why only him was sent? And also, if they don't have enough money, why did he not stop in Iran and then make arrangements for his own family to come with him? But
what you're seeing with a lot of asylum seekers is the sort of wealthiest people who make it over. The most privileged people in those countries. I mean, obviously these things are relative, but the people who can afford to pay the people smugglers, who can afford to
it's not cheap at all.
It's not like a Ryanair flight.
So anyway, he continues, I am trying to find a new country, a new life without war, the teenager said. Britain is my final destination. It is a good country. I can finish my education and be safe. Husseini had already heard tales of dangers crossing in an overloaded inflatable dinghies. Quote, I have no choice. I have to do it, he said. Just has to. No possible other thing he can do. Couldn't stay in France. Couldn't apply for asylum in France. Probably been rejected in France.
Why don't they ask him, like, why Britain? Why is Britain such a... I don't understand why they're coming to Britain. I don't understand why people like early man came to Britain in the first place, because they didn't even have, you know, that was before Gore-Tex and central heating.
So we could stay away from the French. I mean, enough reason as any.
Yeah, but they weren't French there, because everybody had just like migrated from Africa.
Bad omens. And, turn into the French. Yeah,
I don't know why they kept going. Just stop at Greece.
Yeah. So they go on to talk about the new rules of trying to push them back and, you know, the turnarounds. And it says, for many migrants, Britain's stance hurts. It's inhumane, said a second Sudanese man who gave his name as Adam A. They want to push us into the water. Nope. We want you to be legitimate, not chances. That's the thing. And the thing in my mind as well is, like, we don't house the native French homeless. I don't know why we should house France's imported homeless. Because that's what these people fundamentally are. If they are not legitimate asylum seekers, they failed in France, so now they want to come to the UK, you're just an imported homeless person.
Do you trust the French asylum system?
It seems to be true when they come to the UK, because if they've been rejected in France, it's like 100% of the time they're rejected in the UK as well.
Oh, right.
Because
right.
we talked to them.
Right.
And, hey, who's this? Yeah, he told us some other details.
Yeah.
Completely, contradiction. What's, clearly a chancer.
What's interesting is Britain's attitude to immigration is, it's become less of a concern for people. So this is in The Economist this week. So there's an Ipsos Mori poll. This has tracked it from like 2015. So, before Brexit, people were very concerned about immigration. So the share of wanted immigration reduced was 69% in 2015. It's come down to 50% in the most recent poll. And some people think that immigration, quite a lot of people, a non-negligible amount, like 18% want more immigration. So it's not the issue. I think Brexit actually, it's the sort of leftists, open border people's dream, because it made people feel heard. It made people feel that something was being done about it. It sort of provided that catharsis. And also Brexit, it's opening up immigration to the whole of the world. So previously, there's free movement within Europe, but Europe's mainly white. So this opens up immigration to Pakistan and India.
With the same standards, you know, the point system of you must make this much money.
Well, there is a point system now, which there wasn't under the free movement in Europe. Mm. You know, you just go and work in a country. The point system, which does need some tweaking. I think we need to do, just take the hot ones.
But anyway, this this specific story is, of course, not around migration in its total, but asylum seekers.
Yeah.
And even then, the reason I have particular hatred for these people is because you can meet real asylum seekers who have come from, like, let's say, particularly dictatorial Asian countries, and they need to be here. They can't be elsewhere. You know, you can put them in some other Western country, but you can't put them in an Eastern country because they'll be hunted down.
Right.
And therefore, you know, legitimate, you can hear their stories. They've been through hell to get here,
right.
And there's no one who deserves it more. And you get these chancers who are just like, yeah, just gives it. And we can look at the statistics as well. So this is the Home Office statistics that I think, and David from Twitter actually alluded me to. So if we go through this, we can go through the graphs. So there's a graph on here about nationality, and you can see the different national groups. So the groups who claim to come here are mostly Iranian, then Albanian, Eritrean, Sudanese, Iraqi, Syrian, Vietnamese, Afghani, Pakistan, and then India. And as you can see, for the acceptance rate for, are we even going to talk to you there for the different groups? None of them bordering Britain. Zero. Mm. All had to come through some other country to get here that was also safe. And then even then, most of these don't have a war going on. I mean, particularly India being the funniest one. Where it's like, literally, really? Mm. You want to claim asylum in Britain?
Well, yeah, right. And Albania.
Yeah.
I mean, what's happening in Albania that's like, what are they escaping there? And
Serbs, I guess.
I'm surprised Iraq. I'm surprised the acceptance rate for Iraq is so low and the acceptance rate for Vietnam is so high, because Vietnam's like, it's a fairly free country.
Yeah, I don't know much about Vietnam's Communist Party, but I imagine there are some problems there, let's say.
Yeah.
So let's move on from that. So they also have a proportion of asylum of main applicants by age and sex graph below this one, in which they have the different groups. So that one there, as you can see, overwhelmingly men. The biggest group being men between 18 and 49, are being up to, 81% men as well. The women, the fact that the footage represents reality, as we've always seen with those dinghies, is always men.
Yeah.
The data also says, it's almost always men.
This
and also
is,
young men.
This is what worries me. I mean, like, importing lots of fighting-age men from Syria and Afghanistan. I mean,
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong with that? And what has gone wrong in the past? It's, I don't know, I just think if we're going to be truly humanitarian, why are we not bringing women and children who are, you know, in a lot of these countries, if there's oppression, if there's dictatorial regimes, if there's, you know, fundamentalist regimes that punish people, it's always women that suffer the most. So why are we not bringing more women over, especially the hot ones? Shamima, Shamima can come in. She's hot now.
Is she?
She looks like she'd be good at tennis as well. We've got to think about future sporting teams.
She's going to be the new Emma Raducanu, or whatever her name was.
That's right.
Anyway, so the most common demographic of asylum applicants are males between the ages of 18 to 29, young men, 44%, and 60% of applicants from Sudanese nationals were males between 18 to 29. 60% of all Sudanese applicants were fighting age men.
Yeah.
What a surprise. So there's also the international comparisons below this one where you can see the different countries, how many they're taking in regards to different groups. And as you can see, the rest of Europe is killing itself. That's their problem. There is no justification for us to kill ourselves. I mean, Germany there being the meme. I mean, the literal meme country.
I mean, you're saying killing yourself. I mean, that's a bit of a sweeping statement because obviously immigration, we've got a shortfall of, you know, with
we're
Brexit
not talking about immigration, we're talking about asylum seekers. So,
right. You know,
the two different standards, just to be clear on that.
Yeah, but asylum seeking is a form of immigration. Yes. It's a method of immigration.
But the Germany one being the hilarious one, because you remember Mama Merkel saying in 2016, if you come to Germany, we'll accept you. And then the EU even said in that period, was it 50% of those who came had no more right to be in Europe than anyone else on the planet?
Right.
Like, right. So there was no procedure. There was no way of checking these people, nor did they even have any right to be there.
Yeah.
50%, according to the EU.
Yeah.
Just of the ones who came to Germany.
Mm.
And it's that's why it's a joke.
And that was in response to the Syrian crisis, I take it.
Yes. And then the vast majority weren't Syrian who came.
Right.
Because this whole thing is a massive mess. If you want a recommended book list for anyone watching, I would recommend Douglas Murray's The Strange Death of Europe. So he just went around Europe during this period and then just documented what he saw and what he learned. And it's insane. I mean, the funniest part being that Germany, remember Merkel saying, we'll take everyone. The same time, she authorized funding for a wall to be built on Greece-Turkey's border. I find that funny.
Yeah.
It's just publicly, yes, we will not build a border wall between Austria and Germany, but we'll build one in Greece.
Well, it's like the Biden administration, they criticized Trump for putting children in cages. Then obviously the children are still getting put in cages, but they're called, you know, they call them something else. And also now the, I don't know if you saw the refugees from Haiti at the border that have come through Mexico being whipped by police. Like some you'd see in, you know, a third world country. It's shocking.
Let's get to the other statistic in here I found interesting. So at the appeals process, they have who makes it through, who doesn't. So before the appeals process, 56% of those who arrive in Britain are rejected. And even after the appeals process, 41% of those apply are rejected for being fakers, not real.
Yeah.
I mean, a failure rate that high of you're not an asylum seeker. You know, we spoke to the French, you applied there, and then you just came here because you thought you'd get in.
Yeah.
That's what's taking place. Although the return rate is like 9% of those who fail get returned. Something like
really?
That.
Really?
It's really
so
bad.
They can still stay, but just under a different...
I know, we just don't get rid of them. Like, we have no mechanism for kicking them out.
So are they staying in sort of internment camps or what?
No, they just go missing.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. So they effectively just cut, like, work in the black market.
Yep.
That's not a racial thing, like, by the way.
Yeah, I'm illegal.
Calling it that because...
They just disappear into the system. And this is the point by Douglas Murray in his book, which he mentions. The number one immigration rule you ever want to keep is keep them out of your country, process them elsewhere. If they are true, let them in.
Right.
You know, that's the way to do it.
Right,
let them in beforehand, you will lose them in the system.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pitiful.
Yeah.
And it's not just us. Every country in Europe has had this problem as well of returns.
And the numbers are... quite substantial. So the Office for National Statistics estimates that the level of immigration has held steady between 2015, even, you know, with Brexit and everything, between 2015 to 2019 at 600,000 to 700,000 people per year. So that's a significant chunk of the population. We're talking, you know, I mean, what is that? Like one I'm terrible with percentages. Is it 1%?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
The other thing may being that the asylum seekers are also ones that usually are where ISIS and whatnot send their troops rather than through the legal migration system because they'll get picked up.
Right, yeah.
So that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on from this. Let's go to the someone like that, Shemina Begum, case study in this sort of thing, let's say. See what she's doing because this is back up in the news, isn't it? So first thing I want to mention, in case people don't know, Shemina Begum is a East End girl who her and her two friends decided to go to Syria to join the Islamic State, because that's what kids do these days, I'm sure. And she...
Well, I mean, when we'd say she decided, I mean, she was groomed. And what's interesting is the average age...
That's the debate.
The average... I mean, well, there's grooming victims in the UK. There's the victims of the Rotherham gangs, the Oxford gangs, and all those other grooming gangs. What's interesting is my mate works in the police up north, and he said the average age of grooming gang victims is actually older than the average age of the ISIS brides. So they're groomed, and I mean, obviously it's less, you know, I don't know. I just see them as victims as well. And I think it's kind of like Shemima Begum. She doesn't seem that smart to start off with, but to blame her for making terrible decisions when she was 15. I mean, when I was 15, I was smoking banana skins. We all do terrible things when we're 15 because we don't know what we're doing. We're idiots.
All right. I don't think I agree with this case just because of the interviews I've seen with
her. Well, wait till you see what she looks like now. Have you got a picture of her looking hot with a baseball cap on?
Let's go through this in the row. So the first thing to mention is in 2019, she gave an interview about this, and I want to play the first clip where she speaks about her time with ISIS.
But you didn't have any regrets up until that point. What was it about Islamic State that attracted you? What did you like about it?
The way they showed how you can go, they'll take care of you, you can have your own family there, you can do anything.
So that's her with her British accent, as you can tell, the new East End accent, because the Cockneys are all gone, aren't they? But the point there as well, she mentions that she didn't have any regrets up until the end, and she says no. So she, at that point, said that she had no regrets. So if we carry on, there's the allegations against her and the reason the British are keeping them out of the British government. So this is Carl posting on Gab, which is about the fact that there was evidence given to the court that she played a role not as just someone's wife, but instead as a Sharia enforcer. So she enforced Islamic State's Islamic law. So the quote here being, she served in Islamic State's morality police and also tried to recruit younger women to join the jihadist group, well-placed sources have told The Telegraph. She was allowed to carry a Kalashnikov rifle and earned a reputation as a strict enforcer of ISIL's laws, such as the dress code for women, sources claimed.
I'm not surprised she didn't want to leave then. I'd stay. If I got a Kalashnikov and I was like in the police, in the ISIS
sheriff.
Police. Yeah, sheriff badge. What are you wearing? Oh my God, dugga, dugga, dugga. Man, that's like my dream job, just walking around Dumfries.
That's the claim against her, that evidence was then given to a court, and a court ruled that the evidence on that evidence that she could not return to the UK because, quote, such actions would be a threat to public safety. So if we carry on from this, there are some other opinions on this situation. So if we go to the next one, we have the Mail, which has an ex-Met counterterrorism chief saying that she's a threat and therefore shouldn't be allowed in, which agrees with the judge. But then we go to the next one, we have her arguing that no, we should be allowed back in. And this is the photo you're talking about, presumably.
Hot Shemima.
No. I don't agree.
That is Hot Shemima. Well, you prefer when she's wearing the full-on, like, you know, Star Wars outfit. I mean, like, that. She looks hot here. Undeniably. Undisputably.
I'm not
that
a fan
of either. That is a swipe right. That is a hard swipe right.
I think I prefer the burqa, but okay.
You prefer, yeah?
Anyway,
That's how rigidly moral you are. You prefer when she's in the morality police.
Cover up, you whore. Anyway, so this is the new outfit that she's wearing. So Shemima Begum begs the British public for forgiveness. She gave two quotes in here for what took place. So she says that the evidence against her, the statements given that she was walking around as an enforcer, she says, there's no evidence because nothing ever happened. The only crime I committed was being dumb enough to join the Islamic State.
And then tell everybody all about it and admit to it and say she loved it.
There's also the comedic line she gave a while back that I couldn't find, but I remember her giving it, which is, my only crime is joining Islamic State. And it's like, yeah, that'll be it. Anyway,
that's amazing.
So if we move on from this, so the UK government,
I forgive you though, Shemima. You can become a MISIS bride.
What is that? The bride for you?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So
I need some morality police in my life.
It's the passport offer there, I suppose. So Good Morning Britain did a segment on this in which they apparently interviewed her in a camp in the morning.
Richard made it.
Find weird. So they say, could you imagine? Oh, God. But I just had in my mind, like, could you imagine whoever's in this camp, like, just get some audio recording of how she really feels, like, how much the papers would pay for that. But anyway, let's move on from there. So you mentioned the argument, which the Mirror mentioned, which is Shemima Begum was groomed and abused like victims in Rotherham, Telford and Rochdale, says a Mirror journo. And thing that comes to mind, could we talk about the link between those two stories? Telford, Rotherham, Islamic State? Could we talk about the ideological link between any of them? How both groups have views on sex slaves, how those Quranic passages influence that sort of thing, how in terms of what your right hand possesses. But no, I suppose not. But the idea that she is the same as those groomed in the grooming gang scandals, because, you know, there's like 50 or something now, actually, counting up. I'm not convinced. I assume you have an argument on this because you mentioned it.
Well, I mean, it's not the same, but it's also bad. Mm. And it's grooming by the, and I think in the West we've got to have an open discussion, and we've got to have, like, be able to speak about it. When people challenged, I mean, the way the authorities and society treated the grooming gang allegations when they first came out, the way they swept it under the carpet, the way they still sweep it under the carpet, like the first social workers to come forward and say, like, you know, we've got a problem with this, the first one who sent on diversity training.
Yes.
And demoted. You know, it's disgusting the way they covered it up, because obviously the Labour establishment in the North, they were reliant on the Muslim bloc vote. 85% of British voting Muslims voted for Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party. The Muslim vote replaced you know, the sort of the white working class vote in some post-industrial
times. I'm trying to remember
times.
The name of the Labour MP who brought this up. Not Sarah Champion, there was one other, but they're the ones who sort of tried to blow the whistle within the party, let's say.
Yeah.
And they paid the price. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to hurry up actually on this. So the next thing to mention is, of course, the citizenship debate. So there's someone here saying that the citizenship is wrong to take away. So Savage Javid says, no, not having it back. And this lady's whining about conditional citizenship, saying that you shouldn't have conditional citizenship if you've got dual citizenship. So the argument being that she has access to Bangladeshi and British, and therefore we can get rid of one, and it doesn't leave her stateless. And the argument here is saying that, I mean, what's the wording there? If you are a British citizen who has links to foreign descendants through your parents, no. Like, this is about her links to terrorist groups. Mm. And should your citizenship be dependent on that? And there's
yeah, we don't automatically, if somebody's linked to, you know, the IRA, they don't automatically lose their Irish citizenship or whatever.
Well, if they had British and Irish,
they were
in England.
Can she go and live in Bangladesh?
So that's the argument here. But if you were a foreigner, I mean, you would get deported and your citizenship taken away. That would be the right thing to do. Like with the grooming gangs, actually, because there are the guys who are Pakistani and British.
Yeah.
They lost their British citizenship and should have been deported.
Yeah.
And they still haven't. Thanks, Home Office. So if we go forward with this, her own father had an opinion on her citizenship debate, which is he supports getting rid of it.
I'm starting to see the root of this problem. So this is bad parenting.
His father had a statement.
She just needed father figures in her life, and ISIS provided that. She's basically the equivalent of a stripper, or you know, or the women I date. this is yet another terrible father.
Yeah, so he had the opinion that we should get rid of her citizenship, which I thought was funny, but we'll move on from that. There was the point made about her, if we go to the next one, we have someone, I think it was Carl's wife, made the point about her, her new nightcap, and her hair got highlighted. He's like, where did you get that done? In the refugee camp? Just a question.
That's a good point.
Presumably her, PR manager is taking care of that.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. So the Bangladeshi government has a position on this, which is that they don't care.
Ooh.
So Bangladeshi government's position is a quote, "She has never sought Bangladeshi citizenship, and her parents are also British citizens," the Bangladeshi minister told the BBC. It's a bit of a non sequitur, because the question is she entitled to Bangladeshi citizenship?
Mm.
The Bangladeshi minister gave a quote. He added that if she did end up coming to Bangladesh, she would fall foul of the country's zero tolerance policy towards terrorism. Bangladeshi law is very clear. Terrorists will have to face a death penalty, he said. Yeah, okay. That's Bangladesh's position, which is, she may have access to citizenship, but if she doesn't come here, we'll kill her for being a terrorist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes the Tories' position on it seem quite liberal by comparison. You know what I mean? Like, Sajid hasn't said, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to kill her.
But I mean, there is a simple solution, which is you could just reinstate the death penalty for terrorists in the UK, and then problem solved. But
well, no, then problem stored up, because because think of the amount of wrongful convictions we'd have.
You think about that, I want to give you a counterexample. So let's go to the last one here, which is just to mention that we already have the death sentence in the UK. We have death by prison instead. So this is the case of the Reading stabber. So Sahala pleaded guilty to his crimes, but was denied his terrorist motive. The judge rejected this and handed him a whole life order, meaning he will never be released from prison.
Yep.
Previously, only one of those who killed Lee Rigby and a man who murdered Joe Cox have received whole life orders from judges for murders motivated by ideology in the UK. So this is people who will never leave prison,
right?
Because they are going to commit terrorism again, so we'll just leave them in prison until they die.
Right, yeah.
So there's the argument of,
but then it's not as bad as being killed, because you've probably got a PlayStation. I mean, it won't be a PlayStation 5, but you've got a PlayStation 4.
But why not kill him?
Because they could be in it. I don't know if you, how much do you trust the government? How much do you trust the authorities and all the bureaucracy that runs everything to get everything right? I haven't seen them get many things right. Never mind.
Do you support them getting the whole life order, then, I wonder?
Yeah, because that's reversible.
Right.
If evidence comes to light, which, you know, it has done, there's been many, many cases of people being wrongfully imprisoned, wrongfully executed.
I don't disagree. But the thing here is, to get a whole life order, the standard of evidence is so high, it's sort of ridiculous. So the Reading stabber, for example, they caught him in the act. Mm. He'd murdered multiple people. He said he did it. There's video evidence of him doing it. You know, all the rest of it. It's ridiculous to say that he didn't. Or the killer of Lee Rigby, where they caught him in the act. They arrested him. He admitted he did it. Said it on video that he did it. The killer of Joe Cox admitted he did it. Caught in the act.
Yeah.
You know.
So let them rot in jail.
We know for 100% certainty they're the ones who did it. There is no evidence going to come out to say
that
they didn't.
Let them rot in jail. And keeping them in jail is actually cheaper than killing them, because there's so many expensive legal processes and appeals that go through. And also, I don't want to be, you know, one of the things I like about Britain is we're not this really harsh, retributive, punitive country that, you know, barbaric, with prehistoric. We don't throw people off buildings. We don't crush them with rocks.
Well, I wasn't planning on that. I was going to go back to the British tradition of being hung by the neck. But
yeah, like, anyway. We don't hang people by the neck either.
Oh, well, that's our tradition. You know, we wouldn't do shooting up against the wall. We'd hang people by the neck.
Yeah. I don't like hanging people by the neck either.
Okay. Well, for those people, I would say I would do it. But anyway, that's my opinion. That's yours. We'll move on because we're running out of time.
Okay.
That took too long for me. Sorry.
Okay.
So let's move on to Norm Macdonald.
Okay, Norm Macdonald. Let me just get my notes up. Norm Macdonald died recently, unfortunately, very sadly, lost a...
F in the chat.
A battle with cancer, although he described it as... and he kept it a secret as well. He described it as not a battle with cancer. He described it as a draw because the cancer died as well. So it's one all. just the sort of comedian he is. He's an amazing comedian. Always went after, you know, difficult subjects and always went for the laugh. Rather, he didn't shy away from anything. He didn't, you know, suppress anything. But wokeists hated him. Number one, because he was on the right. He supported George Bush.
Did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and described Bill Clinton. He went on The View in America, which is like, you know, like an afternoon chat show for women. Like the, what is it? The, what do they call that thing where they sit? Funny
I can't
women?
Remember in the UK.
No, Little Women. Something Women.
Women. Women, women.
Women. So he went on the equivalent of that, and he called Bill Clinton a murderer. He was always saying things that got him into trouble, and he was always getting his shows cancelled. So he was kicked off Saturday Night Live for joking about O.J. Simpson being a murderer. So if we play this clip, you can hear what he's saying. It's only like 10 seconds long.
Well, it is finally official. Murder is legal in the state of California.
So that got him kicked off Saturday Night Live, because I think the producer or somebody was friends with OJ. So he got kicked off, and the guy, the writer who wrote that joke, was kicked off as well.
What's wrong with that?
This is
a joke, you know? It's Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
That's why I'm saying it.
And he had an appearance on The Tonight Show cancelled following disparaging remarks about the Me Too movement. So, he came out in defence of Louis C.K. He actually said, the remark he said about Louis C.K. is another comedian who was, at one point he was like the biggest comedian in the world, just about. But he got taken down because it turned out he was... he's a bit of a sex pest. He was, there's one incident where he asked, he was in a green room with two female comedians, and he said, "Do you mind if I masturbate in front of you?" And they said yes, thinking he was joking. And then he got his dick out and masturbated in front of them. And I think he blocked the door as well. So it's kind of, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's a sort of testament. It's a testament to his skill as a comedian that even his... his sex crimes are weird and funny. But
one way of looking at
it. Yeah, so he was cancelled. He's making a return to live performing now, you know, in venues that'll have him. And obviously with quite a few heckles from angry people who buy tickets and get in. But he said, like, so he was friends with Norm Macdonald, and Norm said, there are very few people who have gone through what they have. So he's referring to Louis C.K. and Roseanne. Losing everything in a day. Of course, people will go, "What about the victims?" But you know what? The victims didn't have to go through that. So I mean, he was always taking an irreverent look at, you know, and obviously, you know, for the last like 5-10 years, you know, totems like the Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter, they've been things you're not allowed to mock, you're not allowed to criticize. They're unimpeachable, you know, monoliths in our culture. So as a comedian, he'd go after them. The thing about it is, so when he made these comments about Louis C.K. and Roseanne, he went on the Howard Stern show to apologize. And I mean, this is the level of cancellation this guy went through. He got cancelled for his apology. So he said, you'd have to have Down syndrome to not feel sorry for harassment victims during his apology. And, and apparently, like, he was going to say the R word, which I don't think I'm even allowed to say anymore. It's so bad. So he's going to say the, you know, when you get like a sofa and it might have been treated with a flame retardant spray.
Right.
So he's going to say, you know, the word that could be pulled out of that sentence. But instead he thought, I can't say that. And then on the spot, his brain just
Down syndrome.
Came up with Down syndrome, which is worse. It's worse. But he got cancelled from the Tonight Show. He got cancelled from loads of stuff. And he always went for the wokeists hated him for, you know, not just for the topics that he spoke about race, he spoke about Me Too, he spoke about, you know, all the sort of dicey issues that you've really got to skate around. He was very funny about it. He always went for the laugh instead of going for applause. He criticised comedians who went for applause because obviously a laugh is involuntary. You can't stop. I mean, sometimes when I'm performing, I'll do a joke that's, you know, nasty or edgy or whatever, and people will laugh, and then they'll suddenly feel the audience catch themselves. Like, oh, I shouldn't laugh at that. You know what I mean? So that involuntary response, I love it when, you know, they try and stop themselves. That involuntary response is honest and it's true, and that's comedy. What, you know, woke comedians do is they go for applause, and applause is a deliberate thing. You don't involuntarily applaud.
Yeah.
You don't go, I'm applauding. Oh, I can't believe I applauded at that. It's a very deliberate thing where you're saying, oh, I agree with you. These are my values as well. This is my opinion too. Oh, yes, thank you. Please say some more things like that. You know what I mean? It's
an interesting point, though. I never thought of it like that. Like, yeah, the audience reactions are different depending on whether or not it's
clapter comedy is absolutely bullshit and nobody really enjoys it, and it's dishonest as well. So yeah, he died just a few days ago, last week. It was terrible. And literally as soon, literally, you know, the moment he was dead, the moment it was announced, comedy wokeists came out and woke people everywhere came out to accuse him of, this person, Jenny Yang, accused him of sexual assault. I mean, like, I don't know, but...
Until he was dead?
Yeah, I mean, it seems unfair to accuse him, like, literally right when he's died. And I don't know, I think, you know, some of the sexual, you know, what could he have done? Asked her for a cup of coffee or something? I don't know, like, I don't think he was going around, like, if he was going around grabbing women or whatever, or being like Louis C.K., I think it would have come out sooner. But again, I don't know. Maybe Jenny's completely right. It's just to choose the moment, to choose the day of his death to reveal it. And then, but other tweets, if we move on to the next one. So yeah, everybody came out. All the wokeists crawled out to accuse him of being, you know, racist, being an abuser, he spoke openly about how trans people deserve to die. But I'm pretty sure it was in a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what the comedian does.
Comedians generally, people always, when they get offended by comedians, they take everything they say at face value. But I've got to be honest, sometimes comedians are joking.
Do you have sometimes. The one? I don't want to ruin it if you do, but do you have the one about him having to believe in God?
No.
Do you know about that one? So he was he's approached by a trans person and they say to him, I can't believe you believe in God, Norm. And he says, well, I have to believe you're an effing woman.
I mean, yeah. And that's,
but
you
again,
know, that might be cruel, that might be transphobic, but there's an honesty in there. Because with some transgender women are the hottest women in the world. Some of them, I'm like, why am I having to do all the work in your transition? You know what I mean? You've gone like 2% of the way. You've gone 2%. It's not my transition. Why am I having to put the effort in and having to remember your pronouns and stuff? Come on, just at least meet me halfway. At least shave.
A good way of putting
just
it.
Just a bit of lipstick. So, yeah, we go on to the next one. Norm Macdonald has said some really funny things. He also said some horrible things that I personally do not find funny. They include sexist, homophobic, transphobic, and racist comics meant to be jokes but aren't at all. Why don't you go fuck yourself? Jesus Christ, Mr. J Education Division. Ah, you sound like such a fun person to have at parties. Man, the thing is, none of these people could get on stage and be as funny as Norm Macdonald. They can't be funny. All they can do is tear people down. They can't create.
They probably couldn't even make their mother laugh.
Yeah, no, they couldn't. I mean, there's honestly, comedy is such a difficult thing to do. Laughter is such an honest response. It's, you know, if this person got on stage, zero laughs. So next tweet. And obviously Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald was, I don't know if he was a Republican supporter, but he was certainly, you know, pally with President Bush, the second one, W, and, you know, thought he was great. And spoke out, you know, criticized the Democrats, as people should, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, all right, honestly...
Sorry, this criticism's so basic as well.
And to be like, oh, yeah, so he doesn't think Donald Trump's presidency is that disastrous. So he's racist, you know what I mean? Everything's racist.
So Norm's opinion was it hadn't been that disastrous.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's
it
bad,
wasn't
man.
That disastrous.
Okay. You know? No, it was golden era. So, especially compared to Biden. I mean,
I don't know if I'd call it a golden era either. But you know,
it's always compared to what? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Compared to the months of Biden we've had so far.
I mean, the thing about Trump. I mean, a couple of things I don't like about. Like, I thought, you know, his tax policy was, you know, just wasn't right. You know, like putting the country into debt to give tax breaks to people. But man, every time he spoke on TV, it was so fun. So exhilarating to watch somebody who just didn't give a shit. And also it reversed. Like, since the 80s, we've had the sort of politicians have been removing themselves more and more from, you know, the front line and from speaking their minds. They speak off auto cues. Reagan, I mean, obviously he was going senile at the time, but Reagan did press conferences literally in the steps of helicopters and stuff. So there were photo opportunities. Nobody could shout a question over the sound of the rotor blades. So, you know, presidents were...
That's genius.
Yeah, presidents were moving themselves further and further back from the media. And it was all, you know, very, very staged and scripted and managed. Whereas Trump just gets right down there, like argues with people, calls them fat pigs, calls like, oh man, I love when he just, you know, some like deeply respected like journalist who studied at Harvard and, you know, is all, you know, going for a Pulitzer and stuff, and Donald Trump would be like, yeah, you fucking idiot, you know what I mean? Just amazing. But Donald Trump, there's an honesty. He shot from the hip and he put himself in the front line and answered questions, which Biden doesn't do. It's all staged, gone back to stage photo opportunities, him with an ice cream. So yeah, if we move on to the next. All right, so we're on the next one. So yeah, I mean, all these people coming out, oh, man was a transphobe and showed a lot of racist flags. What do they mean, racist flags? Is that the Union Jack, the Confederate flag? I don't know.
No, it's just a flag that says the word racism on it. Just...
Yeah.
The racist flag.
Maybe it's the ISIS flag, because they're quite racist. I mean, leftists don't want to talk about it.
Do you know Amy Horowitz?
I know the name.
So he went out and he brought an ISIS flag and an Israeli flag. And he spent one day, just like the afternoon for an hour, just waving the ISIS flag around on campus before they got big. And people kept coming up to him being like, yeah, brother. And it was just like, oh, God. They were like, yeah, you know, free the Arab world or something. Yeah. It was just like, you really don't know what this is, hopefully. Because if you do, it's worse. So he went out with the Israel one afterwards and loads of campus students hated him, of course. And it was just like,
yeah, because of course they hate Israel because, you know, it's an oasis of democracy and freedom and equal rights in the midst of a sea of dictators and horrible totalitarian regimes that execute gays and punish women for adultery and all the rest of it. So yeah, man, the left seemed to be very confused. I actually had that when I was, so the show Hatin' Live that I run up in Edinburgh. So we had a roller banner and it had like, you know, because Hatin' Live, basically you write down what you hate and it goes into a bucket. The comedians have to hate in it for you. So we had the roller banner had like sort of examples. So we had like, you know, Tories, recycling, you know, putting recycling in the wrong bin, the mating rituals of hedgehogs, you know, all kinds of, you know, just daft things. And we had ISIS on there as well, because, you know, ISIS at the time were quite big and...
like a band.
Not doing so well now, but, you know, it's something that, you know, you should be allowed to hate on. You know, if you can hate on the Tories, you should be allowed to hate on ISIS.
You know what I mean? And some students, three students or young people were looking at this roller banner, and I was standing flyering them, and they're like, oh, one of them was like, oh, ISIS, isn't that racist? And I'm like, man, how is it racist to hate on ISIS? But that's the attitude that, you know, students have got. It's terrifying. 50% of people go to university and get indoctrinated. And also, people who go to university are generally pretty thick. There's only about maybe 10% of the people who go to university are actually intelligent, because 50% of the population isn't intelligent. So anyway, yeah, so this is... He was transphobic, racist, and joked about prison rape. I mean, prison rape is... It's already hilarious. Anyway, next. I mean, that's why we shouldn't have the death penalty. Those guys are going to be getting like they're. I don't know.
They're actually cornered off in their own separate area, is my understanding.
Oh, so really?
They don't get that form of justice.
That form of justice. Well, my mate Lenny was in. He was in prison for football hooliganism. I don't know if I've spoken to you about this before, but there used to be a video of him on the BBC website. They'll pile off this bus and just go and batter all these like. So their bus, people are throwing ashtrays. People outside this pub are throwing ashtrays. I mean, people like football fans from the other team. West Ham or whatever, were throwing ashtrays and stuff at the bus. The bus just screeches to a halt. They all pile off this bus and Lenny's like booting somebody in the head and stuff. But I mean, I see football hooliganism. Number one, it's entertaining. It's much more entertaining than football. If there's a fight in a football stadium, everybody turns and watches the fight because it's just much better. Whereas if a football match breaks out, a boxing match or at the UFC, nobody turns around and watches the football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, fighting is just exciting. But he went to jail for this, and when he was in jail, like, so that they had like paedophiles and rapists and stuff in there as well. They had their own floor, completely sectioned off, completely separate from the rest. So these people would be like shouting taunts down at the other prisoners. It was basically a cheese and wine evening for all these like sex offenders. They'd be shouting taunts because they knew they were totally safe. It's not like the old days where, they'd get a like boiling sugar water chucked over them or, shanked with a sharpened toothbrush. But anyway, another person calling Norm Macdonald racist. So if we go on to the next one, another person calling Norm Macdonald racist and homophobic and basically saying he's happy that he's dead. Norm Macdonald became a right-wing extremist. I mean, come on. A right-wing extremist. What do words mean nothing anymore?
Like, he was bombing abortion clinics by the end of his
career.
Oh
my God,
surely.
It's ridiculous. A right-wing extremist. Anyway, like, if we keep going. So this is the woman. This is the woman who accused me of racism. And obviously she jumps on any chance.
Wait, she's the reason you have that pass?
Yeah, she's the reason I've got the certificate guaranteeing that I'm not racist from the organisation that she was the diversity and inclusion officer in. So yeah, so she's obviously just was thrilled with the fact that people were calling Norm out. Again, she's Norm, genuinely funny, created loads of great comedy. I guess comedy is subjective, but yeah. So here's I couldn't find this on Twitter, so she might have deleted it. But she's calling him out for racism as well, and it's just it's lazy wokery because they know that Norm can't answer back. It's consequence-free virtue signaling to accuse a dead person of racism or whatever.
I don't think you can libel the dead either.
Yeah, so. It's sad. I mean, like. Obviously with Jimmy Savile, people like that, the death enables people to come forward. These people could have come forward before, Norm died, and he could have given.
But also with Jimmy Savile,
reply.
Everyone in the industry knew about it.
Yeah, absolutely, and they covered it up. It's the BBC, and they love covering up paedophilia. And also, this lassie, she's accused me of racism, accused Norm of racism, she accuses everybody of racism. So Giles Corran, who's a food writer. She worked on a show with him and got him sacked from the show. I think he got sacked from the show. He deleted his Twitter as well. So yeah, if we scroll down, we can see the tweets that she said. So when I worked with Giles, he said, "Can we scroll down?" So when I worked with Giles, he said, "I was only there because of box ticking." Where are the tweets? Down. Oh, there we go. Is it? Down. Ah, there we go. Yeah. Anyway. She accused him and, destroyed his career. And obviously, it's a thrill for these people to cancel people. Like, racism is just this magic axe. The word racism. It's just this magic axe you can go swinging around. You don't need any proof. You don't need to corroborate it. Just call someone racist, destroy them. So yeah, that just, you know, it just made me sort of disgusted. And, you know, to call him racist, transphobic, all the rest of it, I don't believe he genuinely was racist or transphobic or anything else. And in fact, you know, to show how good he was, the next thing shows. So this is David Cross, who's a hilarious comedian, and recognize him from Arrested Development and various films and stuff. So he said, "I'm just gutted about Norm. When I was going through a tough time after I was publicly defined as a racist piece of shit, Norm Macdonald was literally the first person to reach out and tell me that he knew that was ridiculous and that he knew I was a good person and that he had my back." And that's, you know, I think that shows, you know, strength of character, a willingness to go against the grain, which comedians should be doing. And
it's kind of the point of them.
And just empathy and a good person. So Norm, wherever you are, I'm sorry you've had, I hope you're in heaven, you know, with Patrice telling jokes, and I'm sorry you've had this this grief on Twitter, but, you know, I think you're a good person too. Okay, the next story, there's a Malaysian transgender woman who has been charged in Malaysia with, you know, breaching the Islamic laws. She wore traditional Islamic garb to a religious festival, to like a Hajj, and she fled to Thailand, where transgender women are more accepted, and Malaysia is trying to extradite her from Thailand. And as we can see, she's smoking hot. So she runs a cosmetic business. And she was charged in January in an Islamic court outside Kuala Lumpur. And I've been to Kuala Lumpur, I've been to Malaysia quite a lot. And this is the weird thing about Southeast Asia. It's hugely populous, hugely economically prosperous and doing really well. You know, could be hugely militarily powerful. And there's this rise. I mean, traditionally, a lot of these countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, have been very multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious. So, I mean, if you go to Bali, which is part of Indonesia, it's majority Hindi or Hindu, and you know, other places, other islands in Indonesia are Muslim. But they're becoming more fundamentalist. There's this sort of creeping fundamentalism, and I think we're seeing it. We're seeing it with this story here. So, you know, historically, you know, throughout Southeast Asia, transgender women have been, you know, more accepted. You know, in Bangladesh, for example, you've got the hijra, I think they're called. So they used to have an exalted position in society, being given land and allowed to collect donations, being asked to give blessings at weddings. So here's a statue of, that's a hijra on the right, I'm assuming, with some king guy.
It's not very halal.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit at this point, I'm not a historian, but yeah, so, you know, they had an exalted position, and if we look at the next one, we've got actual photos. So this is real hijra, sort of looked better as a statue, but yeah, they had a good status in society. Then, funnily enough, when Britain went over and you know, colonized places, they reduced the you know, because obviously this went against the Victorian, you know, propriety and you know, Christian rules and stuff. So they were reduced to the status of eunuchs, and that's, you know, that's sort of held true through society now, and so, you know, now they're on a sort of lesser level, but you know, it's becoming more of an issue as you know, these countries become more sort of fundamentalist. You know, they're starting to come after transgender people who, you know, previously were just, you know, allowed to live as normal in society. I think, you know, a lot of Muslim countries have got a complicated relationship with transgenderism and homosexuality. I mean, on the one hand, it's illegal and punishable by death in a lot of Muslim countries, and on the other hand, it's incredibly popular. So because you can't You can't get, you know, it's very hard. If you're in a Muslim country, it's very hard to have sex, basically, unless you're married, you're not allowed to have sex.
I'll tell you a story. When I was at university, I shared halls with an Egyptian guy who'd spent a lot of time living in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And I asked him about it. I was like, well, you know, what's going on over there? And he's like, oh, well, you know, when I was there, we're sex segregated because I'm in school and whatnot.
Yeah.
And he says, it's bad, man. It's messed up. I went, well, what's wrong with sex segregated schools? Because I'm thinking boarding schools or whatever in my head. And he goes, man, it goes on so late that they all just start effing each other. I'm just like, what? Just like, Saudi Arabia, yeah, apparently a lot of that goes on.
Yeah, but they don't see it as homosexuality. They just see it as, like, you know, helping a friend out or something like that. You know what I mean?
Total cope.
Which is like, you know, very different from, you know, how
bro, this ain't gay.
Yeah. It's not gay.
Pretty sure it's un-Islamic.
Yeah. But that's, and my friend was, he went over and did comedy in Afghanistan for the troops. And he told me some really funny stories from over there. But he said one night, so he's with the Northern Alliance troops and the British troops and wherever it was, you know, quite a sort of remote place, not the Camp Bastion or whatever it was. But he said one night, you know, they're having a party or having a, you know, everybody's sort of letting their hair down. And the Northern Alliance guys, this like sort of basically teenage boy, like, you know, 13 years old or whatever, turns up with, like, you know, he's wearing makeup and he's got like chains and like bells on his feet and stuff. And he's like dancing for them and stuff. And then they all fuck him.
They're all pedos.
So it's weird. But that's, you know, obviously they're deeply homophobic people, but that's accepted in their society. I don't understand. I really don't understand. When I was in Egypt doing some diving. It's an amazing place for diving. But I was talking to a guy who's staying at my hostel, a gay guy from Sydney in Australia, and I said to him, like, you know, because he's like, you know, very overtly gay, and I said, you know, isn't it difficult for you, you know, traveling through the Middle East when you're obviously gay? And he said, no, I get more action here, way more action here than I do in Australia. Like, they're all, you know, it's all just, you know, winks and, you know, sort of deceit. So it's weird that it goes on so much, but then they're so, their legislation and their authority is so punitive against it. And also, man, I think this is a great opportunity for the UK to offer asylum to hot transgender women who are getting grief in Malaysia. So, yeah.
Sounds like a personal project.
Shemima Begum. I'm just trying to set up a...
You're picking foreign wives.
I'm trying to set up a threesome with Shemima Begum. And, you know, Britain coming back to our shores. Wokists have developed this pregnant man emoji that it's gonna be on all your phones soon. You don't get a choice in this. And I love this. Number one, I love it because it's so, they're catering for such a infinitesimally small fraction of the population. I mean, trans men, so that's somebody who's born.
So these are women who want to be men, but of course still have female reproductive systems and therefore can get pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody who's born a woman transitions to being a man, but can still get pregnant. And it does happen, but I mean, it doesn't happen a lot because actually the, you know, the hormone treatment and the transitioning process can often, you know, make people infertile, which is you know, a serious issue. Hormones that they put, you know, teenagers, now children as well, on, you know, can have serious side effects with infertility, osteoporosis, all the rest of it. But what I love most about this is, you know, the wokists are trying to be, the technology companies are trying to be so woke and be like, oh yes, so we've got a pregnant man emoji for, you know, so pregnant men can feel included. Number one, there's about 12 pregnant men, you know what I mean, in the UK, so we're not servicing a huge market here.
They're all women, and fundamentally, ergo the pregnancy,
no,
as well.
The real men who can get pregnant because they've got vaginas. But
I also love how it just looks
what I love about this most is, this, you know, nobody's going to use it to represent a trans, but this is just going to be used to tell your mate he's a fat bastard.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, it looks like someone after Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I'm just sitting through Dr. No. You know, it's like, I'm just going to watch The Great Escape and have some Baileys. That is just a fat bastard man. So everybody's just going to be, you know, it's going to be used for the most unwoke purpose, for body shaming your male friends. Nothing to do with trans men whatsoever.
Yeah, it reminds me of the gun emojis. You know, over time, they slowly moved the gun emojis to be water pistols.
Oh, really?
Because they're like, oh, we're changing culture. Water pistols, therefore no one's killing each other. So the idea was that you'd have youngsters sending gun emojis to each other as like threats and stuff.
Yeah.
But this got really awkward when, like, in the middle of the transition, some phone showed a real gun, some phone water pistols.
Whatever. Right, right.
But, of course, you just change it to using a dagger instead.
Yeah.
Idiots. Like, the emojis don't change culture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And kids, can you still get toy guns for kids to play with? Because I haven't.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, you could just message, I'm going to kill you. I mean, like, I don't know why they thought the emojis would change.
Although that would be breaching the, what is it, the Communications Act of 1998 or something?
Yeah, yeah. So.
That would be terrorism, in fact. And that would mean you would want them killed.
I won't do it then. Anyway, moving on. So we're going to get through this final story because it's time sensitive. So we're going to talk about the eco-fascist blockades, which are being set up in the UK. And I'm calling them that because I think it accurately describes what they're doing. Mm. So here's the first story. Climate protesters block access to M25 for fourth time in a week. So this is a lot of people deciding that they're going to blockade the M25. For people who don't know, foreigners, the M25 is a big motorway that goes around London, one of the main ones. And they want to shut this down. And the group doing it is called Insulate Britain. Why Insulate Britain? Why not Extinction Rebellion or the Green Party or Greenpeace or anything else?
And I take it Insulate Britain, their primary focus is loft insulation, getting glass fibre into people's lofts. So why are they shutting down a motorway?
Because, you know, the environment. So, But if we move on from this, I just want to show why Extinction Rebellion's not so hot anymore, because everyone hates them.
Yeah.
Because when you do this kind of stuff, everyone hates you.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful to see.
Yeah. 19% of the British public view Extinction Rebellion in somewhat or a very positive light, whereas 49% of the people of Britain view them in a very negative or fairly negative light.
Yeah.
And I can trust this one because it doesn't add up to 71% for fun. Once inside a joke anyway. So if we go on, there's them blocking the road here, as you can see in the footage, and then some guy was literally just honking his horn like for 10 minutes straight or something, right, to hopefully make sure they lose their hearing because he's sick of them. And they just sat here for ages with the blessing of the police. If we go to the next one, there was some guy who, some North FC mad lad, who went up and just started dragging them, trying to remove them.
Nice.
But the police decided to defend them and not drag them away like a police officer should in this instance.
Yeah, this is the thing. Why are the police stopping him from dragging them away? They're creating an imposition on him. And he's not allowed to clear that imposition. This is like, because I had animal, you know, the anti-vivisection people, the anti-animal testing people, they were like screaming. I was screaming at people in megaphones. I was walking past near the Natural History Museum. I was walking past and I was like, I hate being screamed at, but especially when it's something like that. I turned around and just explained to them, like, if you're, you know, all right, fine, you're like, we won't have animal tests, or, you know, you don't want animal testing, vote with your wallet. Don't have any drugs or medical treatments that have been tested on animals. Because I know for a fact, like...
They don't believe in personal freedom, do they?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And I know for a fact that if they or, you know, their child or something had some sort of illness, man, they'd be straight... They'd happily kill a rat to save their 9-year-old child, which is, in essence, what animal medical testing is. You're killing animals or you know... sort of being mean to animals so you can develop treatments that are safe for humans to save children and people.
But we go back to that footage there of the guy dragging him, just because I think it's beautiful. But anyway, but there's the point there, that these bunch of eco-fascists sit down, decide that they're going to block everyone from driving wherever they need to be, and the police, the correct thing for a police to do is to pick them up, drag them aside, throw them in the bushes. And this guy does that for them because they won't, and he's the bad man.
Because I was going to say, that's what happened. The police came over to me and said, sir, you got to move on.
Yeah, you're doing the breach of the peace.
Yeah, I'm doing the breach, even though I don't have a megaphone.
Yeah, but you're the bad guy in this situation. So we have that. If we carry on, the Green Party, of course, are defending this because Greens are Greens and they will do what they do. Blocking the M25 as part of the Insulate Britain protest, legitimate and reasonable, says Green Party MP Caroline Lucas. Caroline Lucas said her party believes in non-violent direct action is a legitimate when other forms of trying to raise the issues with the government have failed. Speaking to Sky News, Trevor Phillips on The Sunday Show, Ms. Lucas highlighted how the former UN General Secretary Ban Ki-moon has labelled climate issues an emergency. In an emergency situation, she said, we need to take emergency action, and I believe that is what these protesters are doing. So because the government decided to agree with the Labour Party and everyone else and all the rest of it and declare a climate emergency, well, then what? Well, it doesn't really mean anything, surely. In reality. But what it does mean is you can elevate your protests for it to whatever you want, because what stops you?
Yeah.
It's an emergency, don't you know?
Yeah.
Lives are at risk.
It's just a semantic excuse.
Yeah. The disgusting part of this being that the police weren't just not doing their jobs, they were actually helping the people in this instance. You can see here, the police are the ones who actually stopped the traffic so that these guys could go and sit down and block the traffic.
What on earth?
Police help them do it.
That is insane. Can you imagine if this was, I don't know, like...
medical freedom protest or...
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Anti-vax protests or something. The police would be in there with batons smashing them up.
Pepper spray, all the rest of it. As we're seeing in Australia right now, actually. You can go look that up yourselves. So if we want to mention as well, Caroline Lucas is like, well, you know, they have to do it because the government has failed. No, just lies. Just open lies. If we go to the next one, Boris is fully brought up to this stuff. You know, I don't have a dog in this fight at all, but I just find it all... just so hypocritical. So you have Boris here saying now is the time for our green economy. This is his Green New Deal, which is a phrase he stole from the Labour Party, which is hilarious. So if we go to the next one, I think we have a video on this we did back in the day, which is that the Labour Party were actually mad that they stole their term, that they stole from the Democrats, who stole it from AOC. So that's how you get from AOC to Boris within a pipeline. Actually happened. So he has a bunch of plans. He's got his things.
Boris is, I mean, Jeff Norcott's got a great joke about this. People say, you know, do you regret voting for a Tory government? And he says, I regret not getting one.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they've just stolen all, they seem to have stolen all the policies from Jeremy Corbyn's Labour government, just without the anti-Semitism.
Also wanted to mention there was a very funny interview this morning on GB News about this, so get the next one. This is apparently one of the guys who's down there, and Dan Wooten interviewed him, and apparently Dan Wooten knows him, and asked him, why don't you insulate your own house? Because you're called Insulate Britain.
Yeah.
And he didn't have an answer.
Yeah.
He just said, well, you know, if I insulate my house, there's millions of homes that aren't insulated.
That's not a good answer.
Progress starts at home, buddy. If you can't even do it for yourself, why should you do it for anyone else?
This is the difference between the right and the left. The right are all about making the difference in your own life, you know, doing it yourself. Doing it yourself and, you know, everybody having the personal freedom to do what they want. Whereas the left, they're all like, Bukowski had a great line about it. Like, you know, there's so many women who want to change the world but can't keep their own kitchen tidy. Like,
That's the phrase, clean your room, bucko, from Jordan Peterson. Yeah. He didn't clean his room. He didn't insulate his loft. Couldn't be bothered. But he went out and helped block traffic. So we get the next one. We have GMB asking this guy the definition of fascism. And he's just like, yeah, I agree with that. And then he's like, oh, God. It's like, yeah, so that's why I'm calling them eco-fascists, because, I mean, their actions
do... They admit that they are.
they do actually meet the dictionary definition as given there. And then we have the response from James O'Brien, so another leftist on LBC, talking about this. They're doing what they're doing because they care about you. Care so deeply about you and the planet. Aren't they good people? Aren't they good people blocking the traffic? Why do people need to be in cars anyway? Why do they need to go places? Probably just on holiday or something. I don't know. What are they gonna be doing? I don't know. Could be having a stroke. And wanting to go to the hospital.
Well, so, yeah.
Forget the next one here. There's the story. Mum paralyzed by stroke after M25 protester. They tripped to hospital by 6 hours.
Yeah. I mean, that is disgusting. And I mean, this shows that, like, oh, non-violent direct action.
What does that mean?
Yeah. How is this not a violent effect on somebody's life? That's a life-changing event.
Like, this is... like, true, if you want to expand it to what is non-violence, well, if you're blocking people to the point that they are becoming more injured by the fact that they can't get to the hospital, that's violence. Yeah. The fact that you're stopping these people at all is also kind of violence.
Yeah.
You know, you're stopping them from moving. If I stopped you in the street and just, like, me and my buddy stopped you and you couldn't move, we'd be arrested, rightfully, for stopping you.
Yeah, if I was going into hospital and you dragged me back and held me back for 6 hours until, you know, whatever I was going into hospital for happened.
So that's why I say, well, what is the limit? For these people, I mean, literal eco-fascists. I mean, what is their limit? Because the thing in my mind as well, this is going to be kind of a spicy take, but the New Zealand mosque shooter, he was an eco-fascist. I'm not joking. Yeah. If anyone doesn't know, you can go and read his manifesto online if it's still up there somewhere.
Yeah.
And he justified his own actions as eco-fascism.
Yeah.
Of course, he did it along white's identity lines as well, but he did it for eco-fascism. That was his point. And that's why he is a mass murderer. And a POS.
Was the mosque not insulated?
I don't think that was the reasoning, but...
I mean, this is the thing, because you're seeing the, sort of the echoes of, you know, anything that has a sort of totalitarian ideology that seeks to exert power over other people, which is, you know, whether it's Islamic fundamentalist, or whether it's far right, or whether it's eco-fascist, you know, they share the same sort of the ends justify the means. Yeah,
fundamentally for all of these groups. But anyway, John was mentioning, and correctly, that, well, they got arrested after that, surely, and given bail conditions, because you don't want them just going out and doing it again. Nah, the British state is crap. So this was this morning, they went out and just did it again. You can see the footage there, motorway, and they just walk out. Police are there. Police could have stopped them immediately, could have grabbed them and thrown them all into the bushes immediately, and no. And
looks so dangerous.
Yeah, they're risking their lives. They're risking the lives of the person driving. They're also risking anyone else because there could be multiple accidents coming out of this. There was one quite good moment quite late in this footage where a biker comes down and he just swerves around them. And just when they get close, he just starts revving the engine and they back off. Something about biking that's just fantastic. But yeah, these guys here, you can see one of them finally gets dragged away there. And my understanding is the police have finally got around to it, but only after orders from Priti Patel.
Imagine it's ridiculous.
Why does it take that much? So if we go to the next one, you can see more of this. And the Uyghur protesters have been forcefully dragged away off the motorway, RBC reports, and you can see them being dragged by the police and then arrested. If we go to the next one, we have the Surrey police reporting that there have been 23 arrests that they took from this. So they have arrested them, finally. Are they going to give them bail conditions? Who knows? But what stops them from doing it again? What stops them ideologically from doing it again?
Mm.
Nothing. I mean, they were happy after the story of a woman being paralyzed from their actions to go out and do it the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's their limit? That's the thing on my mind. That's why I bring up Christchurch as another example of, well, where is their limit?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, the world is dying. Everyone's going to die. Therefore, anything is justified.
Yeah,
is the argument you get from people who are not serious about the environment. So if we go to the next one as well, I just want to mention, just on the environmental front, just an interesting fact that I saw in my timeline. So this was funny. So this is a pressure group that, like, tries to advocate for why nuclear's a good source.
Dad's army.
Pretty much. So this is just a map of electricity, and you can see who's exporting green electricity, so electricity that's from green sources or whatever. But I think this is just electricity in general, actually. And at this point, it's France exporting electricity to everyone in the middle of the energy crisis.
Because they've got nuclear power. They've got a huge amount of nuclear power.
Everyone else got rid of this.
And what's interesting is, we've sort of created an energy industry that's totally dependent on we need the sun to shine and we need the wind. Well, we need the wind to blow.
Sun shining is not going to happen.
Although the sun has been shining, but like we need the wind to blow. We've got a lot of wind farms, and there was a statistic that said that Scotland can produce 97% of its energy using wind farms, which is apparently that's only if all the wind farms are operating at maximum.
As soon as it's too windy or not windy enough, that goes.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it never actually happens. But yeah, so we need for sustainable energy to work. We need the wind to blow, and the wind hasn't been blowing. So now, and also there's an undersea cable, I think, that stopped working, so we can't get energy from France. And there's something else. So we're dependent on natural gas to fuel the power stations that we've got that can work. And obviously, that sent the gas prices spiking up.
Yeah.
And energy prices going up. And this is purely as a result of this sort of ideology, this mad blind rush towards green power, which has also excluded nuclear power,
which is the thing I'm fundamentally getting at.
And it's nuclear power is the greenest and safest power. Fewer people die per like kilowatt hour or whatever. It's responsible for fewer deaths per amount of electricity produced because more people die falling off windmills. You've got to climb up the ladder and like fix the turbines and stuff. So that's got a risk. The amount of radiation the average person actually consumes from nuclear power over the course of a year is equivalent to eating a banana.
Yeah.
And I've had two bananas already today. And I've got another one here. I'm gonna eat it later. This is nuclear power. Right here, it's got potassium in it. Which,
I remember at university, we had a guy from EDF come to my university and basically like promote to us, you should come and work for us.
Yeah.
And a load of questions from the audience about the radiation. And he just answered them excellently, which is just, no, the standards of Britain are unbelievably strict for good reason, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And we have so many shells and all the other procedures and whatnot, that it's a nothing burger. It really is.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to be serious about the environment, that's the solution.
Yeah.
I mean, demonstrated by that graph of just what's really going on for a minute.
And
France still has its nuclear power, and it's still powering all of Europe.
Yep, yep. And it's nuclear power. You can turn it on when you want. It's always on. It's always there. The wind stops blowing. The sun stops shining. Nuclear power still keeps going. It's clean. And obviously, as we're moving towards, an electric economy instead of a fossil fuel economy, it's perfect. It's the future. So and with the new reactors, like Rolls Royce, funnily enough, build these small reactors. They've had a big contract for India, but just incredibly safe and incredibly efficient, and don't produce loads of waste and don't make everything radioactive. Mm. So a lot of the myths around nuclear power are very that, unfair.
Yes, I mean, not to mention the advances in fusion that are taking place, but we'll wait for the fighter that's being built.
Funnily enough, coal power releases more radiation than nuclear power because there's naturally occurring isotopes in coal. So when you burn it, it goes into the atmosphere. And even though it's very dilute in coal compared to like a uranium rod, they're burning so much that these isotopes are going. So you're actually absorbing more radiation from coal power than you are from nuclear power.
Anyway, on that, let's go to the video comments.
Sophie, your bedroom is a copy and paste of my girlfriend's bedroom. You're like her, just not American. Right, now that's not always a good thing for the following reasons. Why do you unironically like One Piece and Dragon Ball? I'm going to use One Piece as an example for this, but it's basically the argument that just because something's popular does not mean it's good. In order to be a good story and tell a narrative, it must have a defined beginning, middle, and end. One Piece, the goal of the story is to find the one piece of treasure. Over 1,000 chapters in, we're no closer to finding the treasure than we were at chapter 1. This doesn't exist till a story exists to make money for anime studios.
Damn, you're right.
Okay. There's beef now between our commenters about what kind of anime they're reading, but I don't care. So
yeah. What are you, 8 years old? Like, come on.
I'm going to move on from
that. Get a book with words in it.
Let's go to the next one.
No pictures.
And we're now intensifying that effort, offering jabs to 12 to 15-year-olds.
You are scum, sir! And a truly elected scum of that!
Not bad. I don't know if you saw the news, but the medical advisors to the government said 12 to 15's not worth giving the jab to.
Yeah, GCVI or whatever they're called.
And the government went,
Jean-Claude Van Damme's.
We don't care.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous. And I think it could backfire on the government because it's like self-driving cars. It's like people die on the roads every day. But if somebody dies in a self-driving car, it's like, oh my God! This self-driving car killed someone, you know what I mean? And it's going to be the same with these jabs. At the moment, I think the statistics show that only 10 under-18s have died in the UK from coronavirus since the start of the pandemic. And all of them had underlying health conditions. So no healthy under-18s have died from it.
Like the ones with pre-existing conditions like respiratory illnesses have already been given that for that exact reason. Because it's worth it.
Yeah.
For healthy ones, that was the debate. And the science shows it wasn't worth it. And the government said, I don't care about the science. Yeah. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you know, if a child dies, I mean, hopefully they won't, but if a child dies from an allergic reaction or whatever it is from the vaccine, that's going to be like a death from a self-driving car. That's an avoidable death. And I think this decision could really backfire spectacularly on the government. Oh. And yeah, hopefully it doesn't.
Says that it will, though.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't, but because that would be tragic if a child died unnecessarily.
Let's go to the next one.
Hello, I am at the Freedom March, or rather the anti-vaccine mandate march in Ottawa, Ontario, Parliament Hill, and the march is about to start. All the talks have happened. Just wanted to give you a sense of what's going on. I'm not in a helicopter, I don't have a drone, so, I mean, there's a fair bit of people here, and it's good. Here with the kiddo too, here's the back of his head.
Okay, well, I hope you're having a good time.
That's great, yeah, it looks like a fun day out. Yeah. And, just needs to get a better phone. This is the thing, anti-vax people, they're always against 5G. Because I think that was streamed over 2G. That's why.
We need 5G for better video.
Why do they hate 5G so much? 5G's like the best one.
I don't really get it. But anyway, debate for another
time. Mate Hayden actually did a brilliant video that went viral where he did a fake, like a spoof video of him being a telecoms engineer and opening up one of the boxes from a telegraph pole and it had like COVID or something written inside it on a microchip. And then he'd put it up as like to see if it would like catch on. It totally caught on and everybody was like, this is proof. Look, this is proof.
He was the one who wrote it.
Yeah. He totally faked it, yeah.
It's funny. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
My dad has a big bus collection, so he gave me one of his buses. So I took all the seats out of it and run some wires in here so it has power and put new flooring in. And now there's a bunch of computers everywhere so I can do some gaming, I guess. So, yeah.
And you got all that foil. It looks like a grow room. 100% looks like a grow room for weed.
He has 6 buses, so you never know. One of them, but okay, yeah, that's a pretty cool use for one of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I was asking why he needed 6 because it seemed weird. Like you would have thought you'd stop after 2 or something.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
If you want to set up a gaming rig.
So I'm wondering, is there a Lotus Eaters Discord server? Like, is there a place that we can share memes that are too spicy for UK law? basically, you know, because here in America, we can share and talk about nearly anything we want. But in the UK, you guys will have a knock on your door if you host a server that has some spicy memes in it. So I'm just wondering, is there any place where the Lotus Eaters can share memes without having to worry about getting the company itself in trouble?
The answer is no. No, we don't. If you want to share memes, yeah, I suppose just do it amongst each other or online. I don't really know what we can do on that front because the law is the law. And we're not going to mess with that.
The first problem with the Calico was that it had a reputation for being unreliable. This was actually a false reputation. The real problem is that this magazine design requires the cognitive capacity of at least a 2-year-old, which doesn't work when Sager's customers are personally offended at the idea of reading a manual. These are 100-round magazines, by the way. The 9mm versions are 50 or 100 rounds.
Alrighty. Yeah, so it's a really weird rifle he was showing us, and like that's the magazine you put in the back.
Right.
And, like, the bullets come round in the caliber like that, and then.
Right, so cool.
It's a really strange design.
Nice. Yeah. My dad used to have a gun that's. I know Americans always think they're the gun people, and like in the UK we're not allowed guns. My dad had a gun that's so big it's illegal in America. Had to be mounted on a boat. It's a punt gun. Honestly, the size of this
thing. What's a punt gun?
Punt gun. So it used to be. My dad was doing it as like a traditional thing. He was keeping it alive.
What the fuck? Oh, yeah. Googled it. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And when it gets fired, so basically it used to be done for the market before, you know, duck farming, goose farming was commonplace. So you go on the estuary and you go out with the tide. Yeah. So there it is. And you see the size of this thing. So you go, and this is a very...
Sorry,
very,
they're shooting ducks with it? Or
yeah, ducks and geese. So you go out in this boat, the punt, and it's a very shallow hull boat. So you go out with the tide to where all the ducks and geese are on the water. You bang on the bottom of the boat, and all the ducks and geese fly up, and then you fire the gun, and the boat shoots back, but you get about 20 ducks and geese, and then you bring them back, you sell them at the market.
I was going to say, why not use a couple of shotguns? But...
And it's, well, yeah, because you can only, shotguns are just like one at a time, and also it's very hard to, you know, once the birds have flown away. I mean, I've done plenty of shooting with, you know, shooting ducks and geese with shotguns with my dad, you know, down in the shore. My dad's a gunsmith, by the way. But it's a very skilled thing. It's like quite a lot of people have died doing it because you've got to go out with the tide and then come back in with the tide, and you're in this very shallow hull boat because you're going over the sands and stuff. So it's dangerous. You can get swamped. My dad's had like risky moments where sea ice has almost tipped the thing. He's had to turn the boat round to ride boar waves as the wave of the tide comes up the channel and stuff. So yeah, he's had a lot of risk, and he knows people have died from it. But he was just doing it as a sort of, because it's a tradition, used to be done for the market all around the country, and yeah, isn't done anymore, obviously, because we get all our ducks and geese from factory farms where they live in concrete sheds probably and don't eat any natural food. And I like going out and shooting food because you know it's had a good life, and you're sort of giving it the respect of killing it yourself before you eat it instead of like outsourcing the slaughter.
Does he still have the punt gun?
No, he doesn't have the punt gun anymore. He's got some. He's got some shotguns and stuff.
I was thinking that'd be a great attraction. Just like come and visit the village. Why? You can go have a go on the punt gun, farm your own food, take your dogs home. Oh, yeah. That's a great story. I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
let's go to the next one. What's this?
Speaking of getting what you deserve, what was your opinion on Tinder Callum?
Whores. These people are thieves, but they all looked great. I can't think of a more moral way of getting it.
That's why you're single, Callum. He's obviously immoral.
I don't know what the difference is.
I'm not having that problem at all. Coomerism, I'm just doing it for the fun of it. I can take my time. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, every night I go to bed and I'm exhausted.
You're very romantic.
It's been ages, right?
If UKIP proved anything apart from Brexit, it was that there needs to be...
robot women.
Thank you and goodbye. look, I like those. I'm looking forward to more of them. The next one.
Some
Callum,
guns.
Half of my guns are Model 60s, so is there anything you would recommend I buy to help diversify my collection a bit?
Where are you from? First, I assume America, but I don't know why you're asking me either. Like, I don't know.
Get a nice side-by-side, like Wesley Richards or something like that. Like, you know, a classic sporting gun. Like I mean, a Dixon, I don't know. Not this sort of, like, what is this, like a I don't know, my dad knows more about guns than me, but these are sort of your traditional sort of duck shooting.
If you're American, I saw a video from Goodwood in the Athens Discord earlier, which was that he just recommended getting a, I don't know if he sent it in as a video comment, but getting an AK or an AR-15 or something, just because, I mean, why not?
You can't shoot ducks with that.
Yeah, you probably could.
You can't shoot ducks. You can't shoot ducks with bullets. You got to use shot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. But well, not necessarily for duck shooting. I mean, it could be for burglar shooting as well.
Right. Oh, then you also want a shotgun because it's got a much wider spread. It's like Bill Burr's got a brilliant bit in it. Like, you know, if a burglar comes in, you don't want to be like target. You don't want to have to aim. You just point in the general direction.
Well, surely this is a great argument for like getting a cannon and putting grape shot in it, because then it's just like the whole thing's gone.
I mean, the whole side of your house is gone. But the burglar's gone as well.
Just as the founding fathers intended.
You've taken out three bedrooms and your family's all gone. Because apparently if you've got a gun in the house, it's statistically far more likely to be used to kill somebody in your own family than it is, because people, go nuts, go crazy, have arguments and stuff. I've had a few girlfriends that, like, I'm being so glad we didn't have guns in the house. Like, come, oh man, I dated this redhead lassie and, oh, I was in Australia.
What did you do to her to make her want a gun?
She flew to Australia. She thought I was cheating on her and stuff. Lucky guess, but she flew to Australia and punched me in the face and in my venue in front of all the other comedians, the promoters and stuff. This big overhand like Superman punch. It was crazy.
Did you deserve it?
And no, I don't think I did. I don't think I did. And yeah, she used to come home and like when she's drunk after work drinks and stuff and just drink would just like she'd flip. It's crazy. Like if I was a woman and she was a man, she'd probably be in jail now. You know what I mean? But I miss it. It was great going out with them.
Well, but, I suppose it's a warning to the Americans who own guns. Make sure your women are not crazy.
Yeah,
I had a while to learn from that. But
don't date a redhead.
Blanket policy. Yeah. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
There is an old truism among the writing profession. Tom Clancy was only the first to codify it. It's been around since forever. The difference between fiction and reality is that fiction has to make sense. Welcome to Clown World, folks.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a nice line.
I don't know what's with the VHS effects, though. Like, it makes me think of, like, the old Al-Qaeda videos.
Was that deliberate?
I assume so.
Right. But, yeah, because Al-Qaeda and ISIS really stepped up a notch with their production values.
It's 4K now.
4K, pure Netflix ready. They've got gimbals and stuff. And it's amazing. You see, like, the individual hairs on the Jordanian pilot's face while he's burning. It's insane. It's insane.
It reminds me of the Ricky Gervais joke at the Golden Globes. Like, if ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, talking to all the elites in Hollywood. And, yeah, they would. I mean, it'd be in 4K, too, so.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just think I'm too stupid to understand this.
I don't get it.
So this is a leftist YouTuber, Twitch streamer, Hassan Piker. He's an open socialist, glorifies Stalin, Lenin, this sort of thing.
God.
And he did a stream the other day where he was talking about, the science and the scientists and stuff. And he literally said, I'm too stupid to understand, so are all of you, talking to his audience. Let's just trust the experts. I was like, you're too stupid to learn these things. Like, this is what I don't get. Like, all the scientists, all the people at university studying physics, biology, whatever, they're just people who have learnt things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can do the same.
Well,
it just takes
smart,
the work.
You've got to be smart.
You'd be surprised. So they're like, there are plenty of people you meet at university who are not smart and they still manage to get it done.
Yeah.
Like, it's not hard to do. It takes effort.
Oh, yeah, but university degrees, especially like a undergraduate degrees, this is what I noticed at university. I mean, I didn't go to Harvard and I went to Stirling. In Scotland, so
Harvard of the North.
Harvard of the North. But yeah, I couldn't believe how thick people were.
Yeah.
And that's university.
And Hassan Piker is apparently one of them, by his own accord. And, well, maybe not everyone. Maybe people like Hassan can't, but most of you can.
G'day, guys. I'm glad you enjoyed my latest troll shill. But seriously, today, what I wanted to ask was, what do you guys think of the AUKUS deal? The AUUK, the AUKUS deal.
This military collaboration, or not, that makes it sound like a grime album. It's basically the America,
UK,
the
Australia.
UK and Australia are sort of joining up to combine military
China.
Forces. It's like a sort of weird NATO that's left out a bunch of countries.
Yeah, because NATO's a bit weird at this point.
Right.
I've done a lot of reading on it as it came up because it was interesting to me. I don't feel confident enough to say anything heavily knowledgeable about it yet, but I'm sure we'll do a segment on it at some point.
But China is currently having the biggest military buildup in history that's ever been seen. More than like Germany, post Weimar Republic. You know, this we're talking insane levels of military buildup. So it's obviously going to start, rattling sabers and possibly taking back Taiwan. And in fact, culturally, they're even exerting pressure on. There's John Cena had to apologize for describing Taiwan as its own country, even though that's an actual fact. Like, Taiwan is a country.
Not according to the CCP.
Not according to China. But I mean, Taiwan is an example of it's free, it's democratic, it's successful. So those values should be exported to China rather than China exporting its communism to Taiwan.
There were some really funny responses to the whole deal, though, because of course the French are seething, which as an Englishman is fantastic. Good job. So there was the complaints about all sorts of things. But the best one I saw was the response from some insider Australian inside the Australian government who released a statement saying, the French haven't proven themselves to be reliable allies. And it was like, he's not wrong, is he? So regardless of what you think about, we stabbed the French in the back, too bad, they're not worth it. So, yeah.
But what's he talking about, reliable allies? Is he talking about, like, when?
Oh, just in anything, really.
But is he talking like,
the fact that they left NATO for ages, the fact that they didn't come to Iraq with everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like
that.
But
they did go into, I think they went into, was it Libya? They went into somewhere, but without the US.
You think Mali?
The US was, scared to go in.
I think you're thinking Mali.
Is it Mali?
Yeah. But they took like some Czech and Estonian troops with them, and that was all they could muster
right.
as well. So the French are just not a capable force in the same way the other powers are. Mm. But anyway, let's go to the next one.
So Callum, they don't only look at the color of the vehicle. Women also look at how many cup holders a car has. I wanted to go over the differences between mountain people and desert people. Mountain people tend to be more hillbilly-ish, whereas desert people are actually crazy most of the time. There was this guy, he was like making bombs in his house and stuff. And he got arrested, and so his family, other desert people, went to his house, and like they discovered that his car was lined with explosives. And so their thought process was, oh, let's drive this vehicle into the city and park it in front of the courthouse to turn it into the police.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you wouldn't want to get stopped by the police as you're doing that, would you?
No, don't worry, I park the bomb truck outside. Good God.
Here's the keys. I mean, that's, if somebody handed you the keys and told you it's a bomb truck, you're going to be, when you turn that key in the door, you're going to be a little bit nervous. Yeah. I'd maybe tie the key onto a broom handle.
I'd rather hang out with the mountain people. Let's go to the next one.
Hey, Lotus Eaters, Tony D and Little Joan here with another Legend of the Pines, the Flanders Hotel in Ocean City, New Jersey. No, it's not named after that Flanders. It's named after the Battle of Flanders in World War I, built in 1923 in honor of the troops. It's a very posh hotel with catacombs and old-timey stuff. And it is also rumored to be the home of Emily, a ghost who lost her love in the war. There's portraits of Emily and a restaurant in her name.
That's kind of cool. I don't know what it is with Americans, but there seems to be a lot more haunted things in America than there are anywhere else.
Maybe because it's a younger country.
So they just won't believing in ghosts? Or...
Well, yeah, they've had more people die in a recent...
But we've had loads of people die.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense what I said.
But anyway, maybe it's just me, but we'll give the next one because we're running out of time.
Hey, wait, Stunks. Stunks. There we go. Ladies, gentlemen, beings of indeterminate gender, behold!
What the fuck?
Okay. Maybe this is just an anomaly. We've been due for a correction. There's just something about the September-October timeframe that seems to attract economic collapses. 08, Great Depression. It started kicking off right about now.
Yeah, I'm even losing money in my investments right now, and I don't even care because it's just like, well, it's harming China. So,
well, I bought in the other day. I bought shares in EasyJet. I've been richly rewarded by that because I saw EasyJet tanking because
this is not financial advice.
It is. You need to
no, it's not.
You need to build a time machine and go back to 5 days ago
and then buy EasyJet stocks.
Yeah, because I think. There was an initial flurry of good news about international travel, and then as it transpired, so the airline stocks really recovered strongly. So I already had IEJ, the British Airways in Iberia, But then, you know, it turned out coronavirus was, you know, a bit more tricky. The vaccines didn't work quite as well as, you know, as people hoped. So then there's lots of bad news with countries still keeping their borders closed. But then, so then the stocks went down. So then I bought it thinking there's going to be some good news. We're not going to all like, man, like we can't just like all lock ourselves away forever.
And so how much are you up?
Right enough on EasyJet.
Percentage wise.
I'm up about, I could check right now.
Don't worry. As long as you're up, well,
I'm up
because we're out of time, so I need to.
All right, yeah.
But okay. Yeah, if you want more from us, go to lotusleaders.com. Please sign up to get access to all the premium content, and of course, silver for the audio and gold for the video comments. Also, the gold Zoom call I need to mention, which I keep forgetting to mention, actually, this Thursday, not this Friday, because we're doing the live event Friday. And if you'd like to see us, come to the live event. 20 tickets left at the start of this podcast. Don't really know how many's left now. But other than that, thank you and goodbye. We'll be back at 1 o'clock.